Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Kieran from the Sherlocks and we have a great chat. Before we get on with that chat, I'm just going to do a quick few thank yous. So thank you to Carver for sorting this episode out. Big thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then when you get to the end of today's episode with Kieran, go and explore the back catalogue, because if you like people talking about music and their creative journeys, then I've spoke to well over 300 of your favourite musicians, artists, comedians, producers, artists as diverse as James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Maxine Peake, Thomas Turgoose, through to musicians such as the Foo Fighters, Motley Crue, Suede, Idols, Sleaford Mods, Fatboy Slim, producers such as Butch Vig. There's an abundance of ace chats to be enjoyed. So you can go and get stuck in. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast, there's many ways you can do that. We're on all the socials, so give us a like, love, share, retweet. That's all really, really helpful. And if you'd like to support it in another way whilst getting even more content, then I have a Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. And over there, you'll have access to maybe sort of 250 radio shows. We put all the video episodes of these podcasts over on there as well. You get upfront releases and all manner of stuff over there. And it's 79p a month. It's not loads of money, and but it all goes in the pot to help with the podcast. So if you'd like to support the podcast, then that's the best place to do it. And you can find out about that, and you know, the back catalogue of the normal releases that you can get for free, and anything else, merch and stuff. Your one stop shop is www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Anyway, should we get on with today's episode? Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Kieran of the Sherlocks. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beaten Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out. www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Kieran, how are you doing today?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, all right, mate. I can't complain. I guess before we sort of get onto the playlist, it's an inevitable question to ask, but have you found, I mean, we should also point out we're recording this on the 13th of August and restrictions have been dropped and gigs are happening. Have you found the last sort of 16 months, both personally and creatively?
I think personally, I've been fine, to be fair. Obviously, a lot of people haven't been, and it's no one's benefited from it. I think it's been a nightmare for everyone. But personally, I've been all right. I've been keeping busy at golfing and stuff like that, and drinking. that won't start a lockdown, and then. Yeah, and then it gets boring after a few weeks, so you have to find stuff to do, but that's probably where I started getting a bit more creative. But yeah, creatively, I think I've been more creative than ever, to be honest. Probably writing more songs than ever. I'm not sure if other bands are like that, but yeah, for us it's been like last year when we went into lockdown for the first time, like I say, we had weeks of just, it felt like a bit of an holiday, like just staying in, and then you just end up like drinking a lot and playing poker, and so that's what we were doing, just having barbecues every night and stuff. But like after a few weeks doing that, I just found myself writing songs all the time, and then even some songs, like recently, like literally up until this point, I'm still writing songs. So yeah, for us it's been pretty good, to be honest. And then throughout lockdown, we've just been like doing all the stuff that you can do, I suppose, like make music videos and getting into practice room when we can, and just stuff like that, just keeping busy, really.
Did you, when you say you sort of started writing songs, it's really weird because I've probably interviewed a few hundred people, like musicians, over the last sort of 16 months, and I've always asked them that question, and a lot of people said exactly what you said. It started by just getting on the booze every night, and then that gets boring after a while. But a lot of people felt like, because it was the first time that they weren't touring and they had time to sort of stop.
Yeah.
Like, some people thought, right, shit, like, that's it, we're at a standstill now, I've got to write a record. And said that just didn't work. And, you know, I've had other people said, look, we just kind of just didn't do anything knee-jerk, just sort of rolled with it until it just sort of happened. Did you feel like that for you? It just started to naturally sort of come, the songwriting?
Yeah, I think so. It definitely weren't forced. It was. It's just weird, isn't it? I suppose there's been every outcome for different bands. Like, there have been bands where after a few weeks, unfortunately, they've just ended up messaging each other or meeting up if they can and just calling it a day, which is sad. Like, saying, let's just forget band. It depends what level you're at and what, how motivated you are and what other stuff you've got going off in your life. If you're juggling jobs or how much money you're making off it, you might be struggling anyway. So I don't know. But for us, we're in a good position. But I mean, for us, we've never really wanted to do anything else. We've always been focused on it. And since me being 14 or younger, I've been in a band, and then it's only after we started as a band in 2010, did covers in pubs and clubs for like 2-3 years, and then we slowly started doing his own stuff, and then that's when we started getting a bit of momentum. So I mean, to be honest, for us, the idea of finishing the band weren't even an option. But the whole thing, how it's worked out, were just strange anyway. Like, we went on tour in February last year into March, and then on tour, the old guitar player and the old bass player, Josh and Andy, who were brothers, they came to me and Brandon and said, like, we want to, this is pre-pandemic and all, that's the weird thing. And they wanted to move on and do something else, which we obviously respected. And then, like, literally in March or just after that, we went into lockdown. But it's just weird how it worked out, because, like, that would have been a bit of a nightmare for me and Brandon, having to sort it a lot quicker and we probably would have been going into gigs where we weren't ready for them as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, being told that you can't gig, well, it was sort of like a bit of a blessing for us. So it gave us time to meet Trent and Alex and sort it. And then since that point, I mean, we only had two practices, and then we went into Rockfield to do his third album. And then, and then since then, just been practicing. So, like, obviously, we have started gigging now, but, like, all that time, the longer it was going on that we weren't able to gig, we were just in practice rooms, so it was, like, it were in our favour, to be honest. But, yeah, ready to get back now, like.
Okay, well, look, let's start the playlist, because you mentioned Rockfield, and I think we can talk about that shortly. For track one, Kieran, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that you think's got the greatest ever intro, please.
Do you know what?
Do you want me to prompt you?
Yeah, you're going to have to prompt me.
Well, I'm pretty sure it was recorded at Rockfield, and
I put Love Spreads by Stone Roses. Yeah,
I've had so many people. When I first set this podcast up, I thought, someone's going to say Love Spreads. Like it's got to be. Like, why has no one? I've had Fool's Gold, Resurrection, Sally Cinnamon. No one has chosen it in 3 years until today. So I thought it was going to come a lot quicker than it did. So yeah, I don't know why no one's chosen it yet. It's that's a monster intro, right?
It is. It's a tune. It's an absolute tune. It's one of my favourite tunes. It's just everything in it. It's the riff itself is just like, how do you even write that? Like, yeah. Bing, bing, bing. It's class. And yeah, I feel like we've been to Rockfield Studios twice now. We did his debut album there, and we've done the third album there. And I don't know, I feel like we're connected to Stone Roses a little bit. Like, every time we go there, it sounds daft, but like when you're working in them kind of places, like, it's almost like the walls are oozing with people that have been there, like Oasis recording Morning Glory there, and Queen, and everyone, Manic Street Preachers, Charlatans, loads of people. Everyone's got their own bit of history down there. So when you're walking around, and especially if you're like into music and you watch documentaries and stuff like that, and you've seen footage of these people in that studio, it's just weird. So it motivates you a little bit. When you're in studio, like, you just feel like you're in a special place, and then you just, before you know it, you're all just buzzing anyway, and everyone starts coming up with good ideas.
Because they put a documentary about a year ago, didn't they, about Rockfield. Have you seen that?
I've seen it. We were in Rockfield when it got shown.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we took a night off. Well, we didn't have a full day off. We finished working in studio a little bit earlier and said, oh, let's actually go and watch it. So we all walked up to main house. It's if anyone's seen like Oasis documentaries and stuff, that's apparently where Liam and Noel were having a fight in this house, and Liam setting a fire extinguisher off. That's the place we were staying. And we sat in there, and we all watched it, the Rockfield documentary, and had a few beers and that. Clocked off early and did that, so it was pretty special, to be honest.
That's wonderful, man.
Yeah, it was a good night.
We look at that intro there to Love Spreads, and that's kind of very sort of riff-driven, Zeppelin-esque, like, and the way that people were buying and listening to music when the Roses wrote The Second Coming is very different to how people listen and buy music now. We live in a world where it appears that attention spans are getting shorter. And with that in mind, when you approach songwriting, are these things ever a consideration when you're writing a song? Do you know where I'm going with that question?
What, the change in concentration spans and stuff?
Yeah, and the fact that we're seeing so many kind of records now starting with a chorus, and, you know, the traditional format of, you know, verse, chorus, mid, late, like, it seems maybe more pop music, I guess. But I just wonder if, like, you know, to get on playlists, it's like hook 'em quick and things like that. Is that any, does that ever filter through into the process of you writing?
It does. Not so much in the writing. I think I've probably, if it does filter into writing, it's probably just naturally. I've made 3 albums now, so you get better at songwriting, but I suppose I had a, it wasn't a problem, but like a lot of early songs, I used to write different, I don't know why, I used to end up with a different melody in second verse to what I did in first, which it's not a bad thing. It's just like, that's just how I wrote songs. Sorry, I feel like I'm going to sneeze. But yeah, going into second album, we did it with James Skelly, and it weren't until he pointed it out. I never realised, like, we came to do Wallet Tunes, and they were like, could really do it second, like, he was seeing this tune as a potential single as well. And they were like, it might be worth making that second verse match up with the first with melody and stuff. He was like, it's completely different at the minute. So I ended up doing that. And it gave me a few little tips and stuff like that. But,
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I suppose, yeah, it is changing, but I think that's down to, like, when you go back to, not even as far as, like, the 90s, but, like, early 2000s, when you had bands like Libertines. Like, I were a massive fan of Libertines and following that, Baby Shambles and stuff like that, but even all the, even that early 2000s scene, like the Kaiser Chiefs and Arctic Monkeys and that, guitar bands were the popular thing, weren't they? Like, they were some massive bands back then, and I were into them all, but now, it's like, it's more pop, or it's like grime. And it's almost like guitar bands are not, they haven't really been cool since that period. It's like guitar bands are constantly just banging on door, just hoping to get played. And there's some that's dropped through that have done well, but like overall, I think guitar bands find it a lot harder these days. So that's probably why you end up with more hooky, straight to point tunes from guitar bands a lot more, because everyone's desperate to get played, really, and get on playlists, which inevitably will make your band a bit bigger. So yeah, I think it's changing, and that's probably why, like in the 90s, when, like say, when Second Coming came out, stuff like that, it was probably going to get played anyway, and bands were a lot more, they were a lot more cooler, everyone were into it. But
I mean, for somebody that was 40, who's 48, the anticipation of that Roses record coming, we'd waited so long, and it was like, what's it going to be? Like the anticipation was ridiculous for a second Stone Roses, because they'd set the bar so fucking high with that debut. It's like, where are they going to go from there? And like, and then they drop Love Spreads, and it's like, right from the off, it's like, fucking hell, where did that come from? Do you know what I mean? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to take you back for track two, and I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please. Can you remember where you went with this?
Yeah, I think I can, because I was going to choose a few. Don't ask me to pronounce it, but...
Well, I can't. I was thinking, I hope he knows how to pronounce this, because I ain't got a clue.
No, I don't know how to pronounce it. I had to search what the song was, but I knew the song. It's a tune off an old British film directed by Shane Meadows, who's one of my favourites, called This Is England. And there's a lot of... The soundtrack to that film, full stop, is class. Yeah. Like, there's some mint tunes on. But, yeah, like, I don't know. It's not like I burst out crying, I hope, but it's definitely, like, one of the saddest songs on This Is England, and I've always liked that tune. It's by a musician or a...
Come on, have a go.
Something like... I don't even end summer or
let's
in
have
new.
A go. Let's have a look. Right, I've got it on here. Let's have a look. I'm going to have a go here with Ludovico Einaudi. That's what I'm going to have a go at. And
you've probably got that.
And it's called Fury del Mondo. And
yeah.
I think it wasn't just used in the film. I think it was used quite a lot throughout the series as well. I know there's some of the scenes with, like, Woody and Lowell, when it's getting seriously bleak, you know that song generally kind of is soundtracking it. It's a beautiful piece of music, isn't it?
It is, yeah. There's, I think he uses quite a few pieces as well by Ludovico. but yeah, it's to be honest, that's probably, even to this day, it's probably one of my favourite films, that.
Right.
I remember watching it thinking it's class. I'll stick it every now and again. It's not like I watch it all the time because you drive yourself, you get bored of it, but every few years I'll find it out and put it on. I watched all series following it and stuff like that. In fact, not to name drop, but we play golf with Sean from This Is England, Turgoose.
Yeah. He loves his golf, Tomo, don't he?
Yeah, we play quite regularly when we can. When he's not busy and we're not busy, we try and meet up. We'll go down to Grimsby and he'll come up and play some of our courses. Or when Euros were on, we met up in Manchester a couple of times just to watch some matches and stuff like that. So, yeah, he's a good lad.
He come on here and he did choose a track from This Is England. He chose... I can't think who does it. This is the reworking of the Smiths. Please let me get what I want.
Oh yeah.
I can't think who it is. But there's some beautiful records on that. That Phil Regan's Dogwood Blossom is a beautiful record that's used in This Is England. I think there's just... And that's without all the kind of the two-tone and scar stuff in the film as well, which is just sounds so good. When you first see... In that scene where they shave Tomo's head for the first time and then they all walk out and he's got his little Crombie on and you just hear the ska music as they're walking. So fucking cool. So
yeah.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range and it's called Small Fried and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Okay, right, track three. The song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Right, what did I put for this? I feel like I put a Baby Shambles song.
I think you did. Let me just double check.
Delivery.
That's right, you did.
Yeah, that reminds me. I was trying to think about this. Through school, I can't really remember because I was listening to loads. There were a few dance tunes coming out at that time, but I've always been into... I probably look like a bit of a weirdo at school because I think I was, looking back, the one who were only... the only one into decent music. Everyone else were just... You get a lot of people, don't you, that are just like, if you said, oh, what you into, they'll just be like, anything.
Yeah.
So they'll end up listening to just whatever's on, which at my time were like, probably just loads of, probably stuff like Dizzy Rascal and stuff like that. Not that there's nothing wrong with that, but I were like sat at computer sticking stuff like Killers on or, yeah, Baby Shambles. The tune I chose, that song called Delivery. Used to listen to that all the time. I don't know. Always been into that. I suppose my memory of that is like going through school or sound. The tune comes more from like I continued and went to sixth form because there were a sixth form at my school, as opposed to like getting on a bus and going to the nearest college. It was just easy for me to carry on doing what I had been doing and just like, oh, I'll just stay on for sixth form here. So, but a lot of people dropped out by this point, which left me just thinking, like, literally, there's no one here. Huh? No one who I used to talk to were here, really, barring maybe one or two. So in that time, I'd spend a lot of time just listening to music rather than obviously knocking about with my mates and break times and stuff like that. I'd just surround myself with music and just listen to it all dinner break and stuff like that. Go and get me dinner, get on a computer and just bang some Baby Shambles on and just do a bit of work or whatever. So I think that's where that tune comes from. It sticks in my memory.
I think that tune was like a big kind of change, I thought, for Baby Shambles. Up until then, I thought Kilimanjaro and stuff like that felt very kind of, for want of a better word, shambolic, a more kind of loose, like Libertines. And I think they brought Stephen Street in, didn't they, for that album. And I think Delivery was the lead single as well. And as soon as like you heard that, it just felt like they'd kind of just tightened it up a little bit and it felt more in line with what, you know, I guess what Stephen Street had done with, you know, the Smiths and Blur and stuff like that. It felt more like an indie pop single. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And then what were the last record? Prequel to the sequel or something.
Yeah.
I was trying to get that on vinyl, actually, but I can't find it anyway. It must be rare. But yeah, that we all colour splattered all over it and stuff. I think that, same again, that got even tighter. Still sounded like raw in places and still sounded... There's a lot of good tunes on that, actually, but that got a little bit more produced and that's a good record, no?
So just talking about school while we're on this track, like, was that something you enjoyed?
Yeah, we're all right. I mean, going through school, I was like, most people were going to school and then up until a certain point, just going to house parties, whereas I was going to school, especially when it starts going to end of week, Thursday, well, Friday especially, but even earlier sometimes, and I was going off playing gigs all weekend, like, just playing loads of gigs. So, like, when it came, I sort of missed out. I went to a few, don't get me wrong, but, like, I missed out on the going to school, and then there's an house party at wherever. Like, I were off going to a working men's club in Barnsley or playing to, I don't know, sometimes it could be, if it were local, it would be absolutely rammed and there'd be like 500-600 people turning up for us. Or if you play one in Doncaster, there might be two men and a dog just sat there eating some pork scratches while you're trying to bash out a full set. But it were good. I think it's all good. It were all an experience. And I think it doing that for 2-3 years, for one, we're actually learning how to play as instruments because we weren't that good. No one's good when you first start and you haven't really had any lessons. So it got us better at playing together, and it got me like used to all scenarios, like playing to no one, playing to loads, playing to people who are chelping back at you and trying to give you some banter. And it's just learning your craft, isn't it? So like now, if someone said something to me on stage, I know if it's worth ignoring or even like having a laugh with them or whatever. Like it all feeds into what we're doing now.
When you was doing them early gigs, you know, like you say, like your pals are at house parties, you know, after school, and you're going and playing like working men's clubs, which, you know, which can be potentially sort of volatile spaces once everyone's got a few beers and that in them. Was you a confident kid?
No, not really. I were always pretty shy. Still am pretty shy. It's just panned out that I've ended up being the singer in a band, but it's not like I wanted to be the singer from a young age. I always wanted to play guitar, but I sort of fell into this. But I love it now. Probably a lot more confident now, but like, at school, I'd just be the kid. If you spoke to anyone who I used to go to school with, they'd probably can't say that much about me because I just kept myself to myself and like, just dead. I would probably be described as one of them where I was sound. But you couldn't really say much about me because I weren't like mouthy,
yeah,
and I weren't like a weirdo. It's weird. You get different groups in school, don't you? You get like goths, chavs, mouthy kids, bad lads, cool kids. I'd say I were like in the group of cool kids, but not the cool kid. I'm just the one who's all right, but doesn't say much.
I think they call them in-betweeners.
Yeah. I were an in-betweener. used to get called an in-betweener. Everyone said I looked like Jay from In-Betweeners.
Love it. Track 4. First song you remember buying from a record shop?
This is the one I had trouble answering. It should be down as Eminem. Curtain Call, which isn't strictly true. I had trouble answering that one, and Brandon helped me on that. And so that's actually what Brandon got. The album I got, we can go with Curtain Call, right? But the album I got were a Simon Webb album. Well, I'd imagine it was his first album, Sanctuary.
Who was he? Was he the dude in blue?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He had some good tunes, actually. But yeah, Brandon went for Curtain Call. We got them from the same place and all. This is like literally the first record I can remember getting bought for me by my dad. He got Curtain Call, knockoff albums as well, like from a car boot.
Yeah, nice.
It was just in a sleeve.
Yeah, mate.
A piece of paper that they printed off.
Love it.
Yeah, and I had a Simon Webb album, but played hell out of it. Don't know where it is now, but that's mine.
You mentioned searching for the Baby Shambles record on vinyl. As you've got older, have record shops become more important places for you?
A little bit, yeah. Like if we're on tour and stuff like that, and we've got a day off, I'll definitely try. If I see one, I'll go in there.
Yeah.
But I'll try and have a look round. There's a few things we do. Like we'll try and find a snooker or something or. Yeah, go in record store, and you can stay in there for a good hour. Yeah. We are getting bored, just like flicking through stuff. Trying to think of the last time I went in. And the last album I ended up buying were Hopes and Fears, that Keen record.
Mm.
I think I got it from Rough Trade in Nottingham.
Is that was a debut record, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. One with like Somewhere Only We Know and.
Yeah, the green one we like.
Yeah.
It's got white bits on cover.
Them singles off of that record, just class, mate.
Well, we're supporting them actually.
Really?
Yeah, a bit of a plug. That came naturally, but we're supporting them in Scarborough. If I were any good, I'd have the date written down, but I know it's not long. It's. A few weeks, we're supporting them in Scarborough, that open air theatre thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that should be good. Definitely going to stick around and watch them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, for track five, I generally ask guests for a track that soundtracked their year's clubbing, and I probably need to look at this question again, because you've sent me over an answer which, again, isn't the first time I've received that answer. It's loads of people that were just working musicians that kind of replicated what you said of didn't really get a chance to do that because I was out and about gigging, and that's pretty much the case for you.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Just out gigging all the time. Occasionally we'd get a gig. This is when we were doing covers and stuff. By this point, we're probably playing a couple of our own, actually, but you get a lot of people coming up in working men's clubs and stuff saying, oh, can you play my daughter's birthday, or can you play my son's birthday? And in early days, we took quite a few of them. And they were asking about DJs and stuff like that. And we used to just, as part of our service, go, oh, we'll DJ for you as well. So we'd plug a little iPod in. And this playlist stayed the same for years and years. And like back then, what were popular one month or that year? Like if you're playing that same tune a year later, it's like, why are you playing that? That's
yeah.
Old. And we just made this playlist of like loads of tunes like Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling and stuff yeah. like that. And Rihanna. And we didn't change it for like from when we made it to when we stopped doing birthday parties and stuff. So it was just funny. Like we'd be playing someone's birthday who might be like 16, 17, who's like probably a lot more conscious about what tunes are getting played because they're at that point where they want to be cool and stuff like that. And we were playing like the oldest playlist. it must have just been embarrassing for them.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You talk about sort of like we spoke about confidence and what you said there about, you know, we'd say, oh, we're DJ as well, you know, and you were proper young lads at this point, and so confidence aside, you know, and aside from what you was doing then, you've then gone on to have, you know, success in a really difficult industry. So putting confidence to one side, tell me about drive. Are you driven?
Massively, yeah. I think it's one of them. It's a weird industry. So for us, we're massively driven. But like, if you say you're driven every day and you put something out on your socials, just like forcing it down people's necks, it's easy to. It's an hard one to balance because the tunes have never been a problem, really, especially with this. The new album we recorded last year, the songs are stronger than ever. It's more a case of like the hardest thing I find, which I don't really get involved in, is engaging with your fans and letting them know stuff, we are doing their head in. And it's an hard one. It almost feels like these days the hardest bit is everything else but the tunes. So I write the tunes, and it's not really a problem. It's everything else, how you come across, and if you're forcing it a bit too much down, it's an hard one to balance. And it's ever changing as well. And like you mentioned earlier, everybody wants everything now. So like, you've sort of got to be five steps in front all the time. That's why we've started, like, our third album's not even out, even though it's been recorded a year, and we're already like, well, definitely writing, but like even starting recording tunes for the fourth album, because we know in a few months' time, like when the album comes out or when it's been toured and stuff like that, it quickly becomes just another album, an old album, when it's like, where's the new stuff? So gotta be on it. But yeah, we're definitely driven. Definitely.
I'm going to take you home for track six. Favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Right. What did I put for this one?
Let's have a look.
I feel like I put... No, I don't think I did there.
You got a bit self-indulgent on this one.
Did I put one of our tracks?
Yeah, man.
What tune did I put?
You went for... Falling.
Cheers. Falling.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's right. Honestly, like our hometown is, as I mentioned earlier, it might be like 15 miles just outside Sheffield. So we're just outside the main bit, but where I currently am, there's no bands. We were the, for a while, there might have been another couple of bands, which were like cover bands. We were the first, there used to be a band actually back in 90s or early 2000s, probably 90s, who were still a club band around here, but like at one point they had a shot at doing, I think they did a couple of their own tunes, and everyone were like buzzing over them like they were going to be the next big thing, and for whatever reason it never happened, but they still play covers and stuff like that, and we always meet up with them, and they've always been supportive of us, actually. And since them to us, it's like there were no bands, like just people are not bothered. So then we started kicking off, playing covers and stuff like that. And then we were just filling clubs around here, like I say, like 500, 600 people turning up. Just absolutely nuts. And we were only doing covers. And then we started doing a couple of his own tunes, and that started catching on. And then we saw a couple of bands start up trying to do what we were doing. And then I think they're just finished. Both of them just like, we in a few months or whatever, a year, packed up and called it a day. And then we just like kept on just getting out of this village and going to Sheffield and then taking it all across UK and then started going to Europe. And then even like we found ourselves playing in South Korea and Japan on festival slots and stuff like that. So, yeah, there literally is no one else around here doing it. I don't know why. It's just a really small, quiet village where everyone knows each other. And it's just not really... I'm looking out a window while I'm saying it. But it's just not a thing around here. Yeah. There's only us. It's weird, like, sometimes when we get the gear ready, which is in, like, a lock-up near here, there'll be people beeping on and just like waving to us. Well, I say everyone knows each other, like who we don't actually know. And they'll be like, going, all right, where are you going this week? And just waving and beeping on and stuff while I'm pushing an AC30 into back at amp.
But I mean, I think that's a really beautiful thing. The fact that it is such a small place and you know, and that level of support is there. That's pure homegrown. I love that. But did you also feel part of the sort of rich history of what's 15 miles away, you know, in Sheffield, and seeing the kind of, you know, the history that's got in you know, in music is ridiculous. And, you know, did you feel part of that? And do you feel part of that?
I think we did feel Although, like, Arctic Monkeys were a big... they've never been a massive influence. A lot of people early days say, oh, they sound like Arctic Monkeys, but that's just, like, lazy reporting. If you listen to us and listen to Arctic Monkeys, we don't really sound anything, apart from his accents, slightly. Musically, I don't think we sound anything like them, but... Yeah, they're from a place called Birdwell, which is, like, the Barnsley side of Sheffield. It's not far from where we are, so I suppose seeing them made us think, like, it's possible. Like, they're literally from this place called Birdwell, or Eye Green, which is, like, near there. And then you see a band like that, they're absolutely huge now, aren't they? So, yeah, I suppose you see it and just think, yeah, it's possible, so long as you write good tunes.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. And then you can get people buzzing over your gigs and people, as long as people keep coming back to watch you and they buy your records, it's there's no limits on how big you can get.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you to DJ again now for this last track and play Tastemaker, and this is your chance to turn someone onto something new. And for the last track, it's a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Yeah, it's a track called Every Day by Slade. If you've not listened to it, listen to it. A lot of people, I mean, I shouldn't even know Slade, but obviously there's the famous Christmas tune that gets played every year. But, like, not even that. Like, a lot of stuff got passed down from my dad to me, and he's always been into Slade. I'm trying to think what that album's called, actually. There's a Red album. That's like probably the most famous album. That's a good record. But yeah, Every Day. I'm trying to think when I heard that first. I feel like I've known that tune for ages, but I'd imagine it must have been my dad that played it me. But it's just like I don't know if it were a single or if it's a popular one. I actually don't know, but...
I don't think it was.
It's a class tune. It's like a steady sort of tune. Sounds a little bit sad, but, like, Noddy's vocals on it are just insane. Melody's class. It's just one of them tunes where everything's mint on it. Lyrics are a beast. I'm trying to think when I went on holiday, actually. Probably the last holiday. I was blasting out Slade more than ever. Discovering new stuff and just sticking stuff on, and then it just turns into your favourite tune. But yeah, I don't really know what to say about Every Day, because I can't pinpoint when I first heard it and stuff. Yeah. It definitely have been my dad that played it me, but it's probably one of my favourite Slade tunes.
I think anyone that likes guitar music, you know, should go check out Slade, because it is easy to just think, oh, that's the dude that does the Christmas song. And aside from that, like, as you said, like, Noddy's vocals are fucking insane. They're so good. And I think Noel Gallagher said, like, what was it? To quote him when he was asked about Slade, they look like fucking Diddy men, but they write proper fucking bangers. And it's like, that's exactly that. Because I remember growing up seeing Slade and just thinking, what the fuck do them guys look like? They look fucking mental. Like, you got Dave Hill's fucking fringe, like, and obviously Noddy with his big chops and that just look mental. And, like, but the songs are just pure rock and roll bangers, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, they are. They're class, proper class. And it's same again. It all feeds in, whatever you listen to. I listen to Slade quite a lot, and I don't know if it feeds into our music, but, like, I've been listening to a Slade tune and thought, that reminds me of that Oasis tune.
Yeah.
A little bit. You know, just like a guitar riff or something. And it all feeds in, and Slade are I don't know if are they all alive, and are they touring?
Stuff like that? Well, Noddy quit Slade probably about 15, 20 years ago. Dave Hill went out as Slade, or Dave Hill Slade. I don't know if he's still doing that, but he was doing that until maybe 5 years ago. But, yeah, Noddy's kind of not involved in it anymore.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I would have loved to. If I were around at the time, I'd be watching Suede.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a wall of sound, wouldn't it, live?
Yeah. It's his range as well.
Yeah.
His range is so high. Like, some of the notes he reaches is insane. Yeah. We used to cover, around Christmas time, we obviously used to do the Christmas tune, but, like, we've tried covering a couple of Slade tunes, like Come On, Feel the Noise and stuff like that, and it's just like, you don't realise until you start singing some certain Slade songs where you think, Christ, how high is this? Like, his range is insane.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all your song choices on, and obviously we put some of your stuff on there as well. And as we sort of find ourselves out of lockdown now, and as mentioned at the beginning, gigs are happening again. The second half of 2021 hopefully will be a far more connected and back to a normality that I think we've missed a lot. So with all of that in mind, what are you looking forward to personally from the rest of this year, and what's going to be happening professionally?
I'm looking forward to, as stuff opens up, going to a few gigs myself, hopefully getting away somewhere, and then band-wise, just playing a lot more gigs. We've obviously missed out on, like, 16 months, pretty much. Yeah, I think it was 16 months. We played our first gig the other week at Tramlines Festival on main stage, and I worked it out. It had been, like, 16 months or just over since we played a gig, which is, like, mental.
How was it?
Do you know what? It was strangely, like, for me on stage, I thought it'd be just a bit of a shambles and not know what to say and stuff like that, but it's like, it was like riding a bike. It's like, got on stage, the tunes were obviously going to be good anyway because we'd been practicing. It's not like we just turned up after 16 months and not even took guitar at all, but the only bit that was worrying me, but not worrying, but like thinking the only thing that's going to feel different is talking to crowd and what you do in between tunes. But it's weird. It all just came back. Like, I was talking to crowd and having a laugh with them, and it all just felt weirdly back to normal. And Tramlines were a government, I don't know what you call it, a government pilot festival or something. So everything could happen as normal. There were no social distancing. You didn't have to wear a face mask if you didn't want. And the crowd were literally just as a crowd were, just rammed on main stage, just a sea of people, which will be worrying for a lot of people. They'll just be thinking, oh my God. But everyone had done what they can to get in a safe way. So it were good. It were mad, to be fair. It were pretty, there were a moment, I think in one of the tunes, where I was just looking out, and we had this long intro on Nobody Knows Anyway, and we're just playing that, and I was just looking out thinking, this is nuts. Like, it's been so long since we've played a gig full stop, but like to come back and play on main stage third from top at like a peak time, there were thousands and thousands of people just out there watching us. We were absolutely rammed. So yeah, it was a special moment, but yeah, looking forward to playing more gigs. Hopefully get his album out this year, get touring. Yeah, and like I say, see a lot of bands, and just more of the same, really. Make up for lost time. But it's not been lost time because we made use of it, but it's been lost time as far as gigging.
And in regards to gigs, record releases and stuff, where's the best place for people to keep up the speed of the band?
What, the best place to find us?
Yeah.
Just all your usuals. Spotify, we're on there. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever else it is. We're on them all. But yeah, just at the Sherlocks, and then as websites, at the Sherlocks Music, I think, .co.uk. Yeah, and you can see where we're gigging. New music coming out. There's plenty more new music coming out, to be fair. We just dropped the second single, City Lights, from his third album. That came out last night. Got his first play on Radio X yesterday evening. And
who played that, John?
George Godfrey.
All right, nice.
It's like a, I think he's like a new upcoming DJ on Radio X. Nice guy. So yeah, just building towards the third album now. So it's nice to see people buzzing over tunes.
Blinding. Kieran, it's been a real joy talking records with you, mate. Thank you so much.
No worries, mate. Enjoyed
Cheers,
it.
Man. There you go. Love the fact that at school you just a hard grafting covers band playing working men's clubs. What a place to earn your stripes. And just great. Love that kind of village vibe, that homegrown thing of, you know, when he said, like, you know, slinging me amp in the van and people are just tooting, asking where we're off to. I love stuff like that. And to be so close to the, you know, the hub of just insane levels of creativity that is Sheffield, all of that going in the pot to, you know, enable these lads to be, you know, recording the third album at Rockfield, you know, hearing what it's like to be at Rockfield as well. Fantastic. And as mentioned, there's a documentary on the BBC iPlayer about Rockfield Studios that is a must see. So if you're not following the lads on the socials, then go and do that now. We would have tagged them in all the posts that we've put on our socials. So go give them a follow. Go check out the new single and go check out their back catalogue. And whilst you're checking out their back catalogue, then go check out the back catalogue of Off the Beaten Track as well. And I'll leave you to it. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.